The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Thanks for being with us. We have Greg Cosell today. Greg Cosell is one of the leading voices out there when it comes to breaking down tape. He's been with NFL Films and NFL Media. He does the NFL Edge matchup, ESPN. Greg Cosell will be with us. Bruce Feldman, one of the leading voices with Fox Sports. Bruce has actually been involved with Ed Orgeron, the head football coach at LSU. Coach O's book, Flip the Script, Lessons Learned on the Road to a Championship. That came out this past week in hardcover last Wednesday. Bruce Feldman was part of that project. And I wanted to have Bruce on to talk about Coach O, the book, and also the opening of Pac-12. There's a big game for Arizona State this week. Can you believe? We actually are in a game week if they play the game. And I'll explain why I just said if, because the virus is in California. I'll get into that here in a little bit. Opening comments on the show, as always, brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union. When you need your business taken care of, they're there to help you take care of yours and your business's business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate Desert Financial Credit Union and their support. Here's Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Nothing or Everything, depending on the day. What's going on? What is new on your end?
Not much, really. Yeah. I mean, nothing new and exciting. I'm excited for ASU football with the little, you know, asterisk of if they actually play. And I'm also wondering if they do play the game, if they're going to have the lights on at the Coliseum, because it will still be dark at 9 in the morning when that game kicks off California time.
So in all seriousness, the virus numbers are rising in LA County. They're rising in Arizona. They're rising in Utah. They are rising everywhere. So do they get to a level where we get to Saturday morning and they're not able to play? Like, I've told you, I'm going. But even me, I'm sitting here looking at it saying, okay, first game, empty stadium, my kind of story, all of that. I'm still flying over Friday. Supposed to see Fabiano. He finally got back to me. Supposed to see some other people I know, right? And I'm hearing all this about how it's on fire over there. And I'm thinking, you know, it probably might not be in my best interest to get on a plane and go. I'm not living in fear. I'm living in being smart. I'll mask up. But LAX, walking through LAX, a lot of people go through LAX. A lot of Ubers going around, a lot of Lyfts going around. Is it really that important? What do you think? Should I go or no? What do you think?
Well, that's your personal call.
But you're the senior executive vice president of Nothing or Everything. So do you want me to go or do you not want me to go?
Well, of course I want you to go.
I'll go.
I think it'd be a great experience. I mean, I think it'd be cool to see a game inside the Coliseum with no one there, just to be able to tell that story. Because until you're actually in a stadium where there are no fans and they're playing like a game that counts, it's the most surreal thing, Brad, you'll ever see. I promise you that.
You were on a Zoom with Cliff Kingsbury this morning. Did he say anything remotely interesting, like Eno, Kenyon Drake, nothing there, Drake Kirkpatrick's injury, any of that stuff?
He did talk about Kenyon Drake's injury, and he actually said he's day-to-day.
So all of us are day-to-day.
Not sure if he's going to play Sunday against the Dolphins, but the injury was far less severe than they anticipated, and the Cardinals did have two players that tested positive for COVID. He was asked to reveal them. He did not reveal them. Wow. And so he talked about that, and coming off the bye, I guess, last year, they were a disaster coming off the bye week, so he kind of changed some things up in terms of the routine and things like that. And then he talked about the Halloween festivities or lack thereof in his neighborhood. He had zero trick-or-treaters, so he left out a bunch of candy just in case there were some late stragglers, and there weren't. So that, honestly, that was the entire Zoom call with Kingsbury this morning at 7 a.m.
In short, nothing really interesting.
Not really.
We have a bench in our front porch that we had all decorated, and we turned it around and put a big bowl of candy and a little sign that said, help yourself, but think of others. And we hung out in the back and my wife and I, and at 9 o'clock went out there and the bowl was empty. So
wow,
there you go. Now it could have been one person that just came along and dumped the whole thing.
I would never do something like that as far as you know.
Did you see that Mike D'Antoni is back with Nash?
As is Amari. Boy, that's just going to be, I have a second favorite team now. The Brooklyn Nets.
I mean, that story, that happened late on Friday. And have Steve Nash as a head coach and have him be smart enough, not that I ever doubted Steve's smartness, but to be smart enough to say, I need a veteran on the bench next to me that's been through the wars. Now, if Mike D'Antoni had got the Philadelphia 76er job, which sounded like he was in line for, former Sixer, and then Doc Rivers becomes available, so Doc gets the 76ers job. So is this a one-year park job for Mike D'Antoni? It doesn't matter. Seeing Amari Stoudemire in one of those suits.
It's going to be great.
Oh, I mean, to have Stat and Steve and Mike, like when the Nets come here to play the Suns, and we don't know the NBA schedule yet.
Right.
But when they come here to play the Suns, how many Nash jerseys will be in the stands? How much cheering will there be for Steve Nash when they, and Amari's, and the head coach, Steve Nash, assisted by Mike D'Antoni, Amari Stoudemire. Nobody's going to boo. Nobody's going
to
boo.
All they need to do is add Rajah Bell to that staff.
Yes.
It would be like the perfect storm of 7 seconds or less.
Yes.
So
they have Jacques Vaughn on that staff. He's a former coach, and they kept Jacques Vaughn. They have Ime Udoka, who was part of Greg Popovich's staff. They got a staff. And so I know it's dead of NBA winter, but for Steve Nash to go out and hire Mike and Amari, to me, was the most interesting story of the weekend by far.
And D'Antoni coached the Knicks, so he's familiar with that area. And I'm sure his wife loves being back, in the greater New York, New Jersey area. So good for them. You know, I always cheer for Mike D'Antoni. I think he's a really good coach, and I think he's a really good guy, too. So.
All right, we lost Sean Connery over the weekend. I got to get into that a little bit later. It is NASCAR week here in the Valley. It means Devin Henry is going to be everywhere this weekend this week on the site. But up next, we will have a Greg Cosell. Greg Cosell with NFL Media. What does he make out of the Cardinals at the bye week, getting ready for Miami? And then later, Bruce Feldman. Maybe Ed Orgeron drops in on his new book, but we know we'll have Bruce Feldman with Fox Sports. Stay with us. As promised, National View now on the Cardinals, NFL Films, NFL Matchup. It is Greg Cosell. Knows much, tells all, or I don't know about all, but a lot around a football team that sits out here. We have a lot of voices that come in, Greg, but I really respect yours. And here in Arizona at 5-2 with the bye week, what are you seeing out of a Cardinals team that doesn't get a whole lot of national run? What strikes you most?
Well, clearly, I mean, they're a team that I think for the most part is built around their offense. Kyler Murray obviously is the focal point. It's a team that has probably been a little different than some might think. When Cliff Kingsbury came in, everybody thought air raid, they're going to just spread it out. They're going to play with four wide receivers all the time, and that's going to be the nature of their offense. Well, that changed pretty much midway through last season, when Cliff Kingsbury started running a lot more conventional NFL personnel packages, 11 personnel, meaning three wide receivers, even 12 personnel with two tight ends. And that's carried over into this season. They still play with four wide receivers, but this is a little more conventional than people might think. And their run game is built that way. It's not necessarily a spread the field run game, light in the box, like you see in college football. I know Kenyon Drake is hurt now. I don't know how long he's out, but it's, and Kyler Murray, obviously he's been a little up and down as a passer, but the running element to his game, both improvisationally and design runs, you know, that has really allowed him to be a big factor. So if he can become more consistent throwing it, then he has a chance to be a special player, because that quickness as a runner really poses problems for defenses.
When Steve Keim drafted Kyler Murray and traded off Josh Rosen, and they fired Steve Wilks out here, I mean, there was just a whole slew of moves that were made. And Kenyon Drake did come in last season, a good move by the Cardinals, it looked like, and he is going to be out a few weeks. Chase Edmonds has come in. But I guess when you look at it from your view, do you see, wow, this thing turned in a hurry, it flipped in a hurry, because they were bottomed out and they were right in no man's land?
Well, I think because of Murray, and like I said, I think probably the national narrative may be that, wow, this kid's unbelievable. And I said, being home all summer, as many of us were, for obvious reasons, you know, I actually did a deep dive on Kyler Murray. Probably I did that with 20 quarterbacks this summer and watched, 300 dropbacks. And to be honest with you, I thought he showed flashes as a rookie, but I didn't think overall he was that good as a rookie. Thought he showed flashes. And I think that this year he's been better, but he still, I think, needs to become more consistent as a thrower. I thought the Dallas game, and they won that big, but the Dallas Monday night game, I thought, was very representative of Kyler to some extent. He had some phenomenal runs, a few really good throws, a couple of busted coverages, obviously, by the Cowboys, but he missed a lot of throws in that game. Now, he threw the ball much better against Seattle. Now, Seattle put no pressure on him whatsoever. You know, one of the problems he had as a rookie was that because he is small, if you start to get the bodies closing in, he falls away from a lot of throws. Just he can't see. He's smaller. Now, he's probably done that his whole life, and he can still make very good throws doing that. But he's thrown the ball a little better this year overall. And like I said, if he can become more consistent with what he adds in the run game, both improvisationally and by design, then you've really got something.
Greg Cosell with us, NFL Films, NFL Matchup, Cardinals halfway point of the season at 5-2 in the very tough NFC West. All right, give me a thumbnail on the wide receiving core here so far. You've got to start with Hopkins and getting him over here from the Texans. Andy Isabella, Christian Kirk, Larry right at this stage. I mean, there's just a lot of guys. What do you make out of this group?
Well, it's a solid group. Look, Hopkins is a complete guy. Probably he's not a true vertical threat, but he can get vertical. So he pretty much gives you everything because he's physical, he's competitive, he can work the short game, the intermediate game really, really well. He gets yards after the catch. He's just a really complete wide receiver. Christian Kirk was a guy I thought was fascinating coming out of college. I know he's from that area. Yep. He has a chance, I think, to be a really solid player. You can line him up inside, you can line him up outside. He caught the long touchdown against Dallas. Obviously, that was a bust by the Cowboys, but he's got that kind of explosive ability to get over the top of defenses. So I think he's a guy that could really become a multidimensional weapon because he can line up in many different locations within your offense. Larry, at this point, he's going to catch the 8, 9, 10-yard balls. I'm sure his numbers reflect that, but he still catches everything. He's very good at, on third down when you need those, when it's third and six and you need mm-hmm. seven, he's going to get seven. It might not look great in the box score and it might not look good for yards per catch, but that's what he is. Isabella is a guy that can run and he won't be a volume target, but he'll be a guy in certain games that will be a factor. And I know they've got some other guys. Is Keyshawn Johnson still out there, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
He started out well last year. And I can't remember whether he got hurt or he just kind of faded. But they have a lot of receivers. But it's clearly Hopkins and Kirk, to me, from the outside, are the main guys. And then, like I said, they play with two tight ends a lot more than people probably think. Arnold is a guy who's kind of a tight end, but a wide receiver type mover as a tight end. And Daniels, he moves well, too. So this is a team that can line up in many different personnel packages and present some problems.
And Chase Edmonds gets overlooked. He's that guy that comes in and gives him a different feel. And with Kenyon Drake now hurt, is he going to be physical enough to hold up out here, I think, is the big question from fans.
Well, I don't think he's a 22-carry-a-game guy. Who's going to be the second back now? Is it Eno Benjamin? Did they draft him?
Yeah, they drafted Eno, yep.
Yeah. I watched him coming out, and he's a tough runner. So if he's the number two back, I would assume he'll get snaps. Because like I said, Edmonds is a really good receiver too. That's the thing. He's another guy that gives you that extra dimension because you can detach him from the formation. So he gives you another weapon in the pass game. But I don't think they'll look at Edmonds as a guy maybe in a given week, but not overall. But of course, Drake will be back. I don't think they will look at Edmonds as a volume runner, but he certainly can fill that role for a couple of weeks.
A couple other questions. We'll let you go. Greg Cosell with us, NFL Films, NFL Matchup. Cliff Kingsbury, if you just went back to the day that he was hired, did you scratch your head? Did you say, huh, that's pretty interesting. Has he exceeded? Has he come in below your expectations on this move?
Well, you know, it's a question that when he got hired, I felt pretty comfortable with what my answer was. And it's turned out to be true. And I hate saying it like that because it's not like I'm smarter than anybody else. But I didn't think he'd be able to run that spread four wide receiver offense as a foundation in the NFL. And I think, quite honestly, he found that out. So now it's a meaningful part of what they do, but it's not the foundation. Because I just don't think in the NFL you can do that as a foundation. And I think he's learned. And look, you know, he probably knows more football than I do, but I think the fact that he's adjusted and schemed is really a credit to him and the coaching staff. And then I think their offense is a really interesting offense to watch. And Murray gives them a really multidimensional weapon. And, you know, I think there's more to come.
One defensive player before I get you out of here, and that's Budda Baker. Highest paid safety in the game. I think if you lined up 100 fans and said, who's the highest paid safety in the game? I don't know if many would get Budda Baker. What do you see out of him on film?
Well, he's a guy that can do a lot of things for you. He's a twitchy, explosive athlete. You can line him up on the ball, on the line of scrimmage. He can blitz. You can play him on the back end. He can cover man-to-man on tight ends. He's a complete safety, in my view. And his competitive toughness, that's something every coach wants with a safety and on a defense. He's a tempo setter. So, no, he's a really, really good football player.
Do they have enough in the NFC West? Can't take all four teams in all likelihood.
Really good division. Obviously, the win they just had was phenomenal, given that they were down 10 with, 3 minutes to whatever it was. I mean, that was, you know, that's one of those wins you may look back on as we keep playing the season, hopefully, say that that was really a big one. But, you know, defensively, it'll be interesting. You know, they probably lack the one pass rusher you'd like to have with Chandler Jones out. So you will see how Vance Joseph schemes that up when needed. You know, I think I think they have three corners that can play man-to-man when all said and done. And did Kirkpatrick get hurt in that game?
Kirkpatrick did get hurt in that game, but he's
now, is he going to be back? What's his injury?
It sounds like it'll be next week. Sounds
okay.
Like.
So the point is they have – when they go to their sub – they play Peterson and Kirkpatrick on the outside and Murphy on the inside. So I think they have three guys who can line up and play man-to-man. And I think that's always a good thing to have in your secondary.
Greg, good stuff. Appreciate the time and insight. Thanks.
All right, Brad, appreciate it.
There's Greg Cosell with us, NFL Films, NFL Matchup. And we're back with more after this timeout. As promised, Bruce Feldman joins us now, Fox Sports, The Athletic. He and Stuart Mandel have a terrific podcast. If you've not checked it out, I've recommended it through the years. And Bruce has come out with a book, not just his first effort, but a really strong, strong book here. Flip the Script on Coach O, Coach Ed Orgeron at LSU. It hit out last week. I want to have Bruce on to talk about the book and how it all came together. This probably would not be a good day to have Coach O on after what happened Saturday, though, right?
Well, I think in some ways it's like right now this is an impracticality. I mean, they have had to flip the script from a team that went obviously and won a national title, had this magical season, and then most of their starters went off to the NFL and a handful of others opted out. And then you get the architect of the offense, Joe Brady, goes to the NFL, and the defensive coordinator, Dave Aranda, gets his head coaching job. So basically you've had to flip the script on what was that. But so it's really, the book is about dealing with change and dealing with kind of growth and evolution. And I think right now this is a real time example that once again, Ed Orgeron's got to deal with. I mean, a lot of it has been really his whole life. And so this is kind of a microcosm of that.
When did this book start to percolate in your mind? Was it when he was at SC and shortly thereafter? How did this come to be, Bruce?
You know, it was in the back of my head for a little while, Brad, because I had done a recruiting book called Meat Market in 2006. And thank you. And I would always get asked by people, are you ever going to do a sequel to Meat Market? And I think the feeling was, you know, would I do the same kind of book just at a different school, as recruiting has kind of changed a little bit in the social media age? And I was like, I don't know if I could A, get that kind of access where I feel like I can really take the reader somewhere where no one else has brought them or is showing them anything. And also, it's a huge commitment to basically go behind the scenes for a year and a half plus. And I just didn't know if the story itself would have to be really unique. And the more I thought about it, especially as you mentioned, I live in Los Angeles. I was around him when he became the interim head coach at USC. And I knew I had seen a lot of evolution from him, from the guy I was around at Ole Miss. And so I had thought a little bit about his story being really unique and maybe there was something there. Well, it wasn't really until last spring, and I was talking to him and he was raving about this new young assistant coach he'd hired from the Saints. That was Joe Brady. And he said, I really think we're on to something here. We just, everything is different. And so I went down and I spent a week with them in April of 2019, was in the meetings and at practice and spent a bunch of time with Joe Brady and was around Joe Burrow and came away thinking, man, they're going to be different. They are going to be really good. Now, I didn't know they were going to win a national title, but when I came home, I started working on the book proposal that is now Flip the Script. And because I knew Ogeron's story, I knew about not just him getting fired at Ole Miss and how he's kind of pivoted from that, but I knew about, you know, his battle with addiction. He's 20 years sober now, but I think that experience and those experiences of what he's learned in recovery and the hard questions you have to make as an individual dealing with that, I think is different. And I think though that really provided invaluable lessons and perspective for him. So that I worked on the book proposal. And then once they beat Alabama last year, I was like, all right, I got a book. Yeah. And that was when it kind of took off. And I spent pretty much like the last 2 months around of the season around them. I was with them for the week leading up to the SEC title game when they blew out Georgia and then beating Oklahoma and then certainly beating Clemson, and just had a really rich detail and experience of seeing what they became and how they got there. And I just felt like this is a lot more than just an LSU story.
Name of the book is Flip the Script. It just came out last week. The story of Ed Orgeron with Bruce Feldman. He joins us here for a few minutes. Fox Sports, The Athletic. Bruce will be at the ASU-USC game as well. Is there something about Orgeron that you learned early on that you said, I would really like to use this, but he's got to be able to trust me? Or was the trust built from day one on this book?
I think it's really the sensitive part about what do you do with the recovery aspect of it. To me, that's a big, big issue. Mm-hmm. And so it's sensitive and everything else. And I don't know, that part we had to really balance. And so I appreciate his trust on that because, like I said, it's a really sensitive subject. But, I was really happy with the end product. But again, when you're dealing with something like that, I think it's something you really got to be careful for.
X's and O's versus life story. How did you balance that in this book?
Basically off of feel. I really felt like what was going to be the big picture takeaway, what matters the most, in terms of how it all fits together, because it all really does fit together. And to me, that I thought really told a story. It's kind of, you can't separate who he is as a person from who he is as a coach in a lot of ways. And I think that's really the carryover effect of that.
It's interesting because if you see him in a post game and you're sitting with 10 people that have never heard him speak before, they're like, who's that? And where did that voice come from? And then you see a rabid, passionate, over-the-top fan base in some ways as LSU, and you put all of that together. And just in these 4 minutes that we've been talking, you explaining his backstory, it's really fascinating.
It is. I mean, it's just very, very unique about how this all comes together. I mean, I just think because of what he's experienced and what he's been through, and it's an evolution, it's really not that it's not something that just happens in a vacuum, right? I mean, I think for him, he is constantly learning. He's constantly evolving. The stuff he could have done based on his instincts normally no longer can be that way, right? He realized, hey, I probably would have handled it this way in the Ole Miss days. I know I can't do it that. You know, like that's very challenging. And I think that's the growth part for him. And I think his awareness is key.
Before I get you out of here, Bruce, Saturday, Arizona State plays USC. You'll be there for the game on Fox at the Coliseum. What are you expecting from Herm Edwards, one, two, from the Pac-12 in the national space, now that the Big 12, it appears, doesn't have a team that can put up an argument about, hey, look at us for the postseason? A lot of questions here, but just really about Saturday and the conference moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see what ASU can be like right now. I mean, I really, you know, Jaden Daniels had a terrific first season. I like a lot of the, I like the direction of what I've seen from ASU. You know, obviously we got to see what the defense looks like now with Marvin Lewis really taking over on that side of the ball. But I think they've recruited well. I think there's some really good energy. They obviously have to replace two terrific players on offense, and, you know, Benjamin and obviously Brandon Ayuk on the outside. The excitement about USC is big now, especially about the offense with Keaton Slovis. I think this is a fun matchup. I mean, you know, it's getting that, you know, for us on, at Fox, it's the big noon kickoff spotlight. That's a big deal. And I think a lot of people are going to be very curious to see, you know, just how players respond to playing at 9 a.m. I'd heard Herm say earlier today that team meal breakfast is going to be at 4:45 a.m. I mean, you know, honestly, Brad, we like on Saturdays for our big noon show. I mean, our wake up call for me is 4 a.m. and I'm in the studio by 5. And while you got, and you know, this is being on camera, it's like it's a little different than me where I am right now, where it's like you kind of roll out of bed, you're dealing with, you know, whatever you can or whatever. It's different from, you know, doing TV and feeling like you have to look like you're alert and everything else. Right. Now multiply that by like 50 because you're playing a football game and how sharp you have to be. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
I appreciate your time. Best of luck with the book. Hopefully we cross paths on Saturday. If not, stay well.
You too. Thanks so much, Brad. It was a pleasure.
Name of the book again is Flip the Script with Bruce Feldman. It's available now. Story of Ed Orgeron at LSU. And we're back with more after this timeout. First of all, what do you think of Bruce Feldman?
Interesting. I mean, really insightful, really informative, as always. He's one of the best in the business. And he's pretty good on TV, too. I think the most interesting part was the fact that ASU is going to serve their pregame meal at 4:45 a.m. on Saturday.
That's awesome.
So that means I would guess they would be getting up at 3:45, maybe 4 o'clock.
It's going to be fun.
In the morning?
It's going to be great. You are expecting like a 6-3 game, it sounds like. You're expecting a game that's just not pretty. But it's a first game for a bunch of kids that weren't going to be allowed to play football anyways. And so the idea of, guys, we'll play at midnight. You know, you've heard that. We'll play you anytime. We'll play you anywhere. You'll play at 3 in the morning. Okay. We'll play at 9 a.m. Is it ideal? No. Is it good for the program? Absolutely. As Bruce said, you're on Fox Big Saturday. The pregame show is at the Coliseum. It's not the Pac-12 network at 7 p.m. in front of friends and family.
Do you watch the Fox pregame show?
I do.
Okay.
I flip back and forth.
Got it.
I have to tell you, full disclosure, this isn't hating on anybody, but I think game day has gotten a little, sometimes just a little much. If I don't see an Adrian Wojnarowski story or Gene Wojnarowski story, if I don't see that, then it's hard for me to sit there because a lot of it is just, we got to take care of the conferences that we have partnerships with. I need some deep dives. And I don't know if you saw the story that Wojo did on the Chanticleers on Saturday morning, but it was as good as anything.
I didn't see it, but it's on the DVR.
Yeah, so, it was great. When I watched the Fox deal on the other side, Matt and Reggie are just USC guys all day long. And they're not afraid to say, we're USC, fight on. LA Times had a big story about marketing that they're doing at USC now on name and likeness. And Leinart is part of the name and likeness committee, so to speak. So I look at that and say, total conflict of interest being on set. Matt's a USC alum. We'd all support our alums. Urban Meyer just feels like he's in that space to say some things from a coaching perspective. it's fine. He got on Penn State the other day about disorganization at the end of their game against Indiana. He had every right to. So I watch both. What's the point?
I think Fox could get a stranglehold on the West Coast if they sort of made that morning slot their window. Because ESPN's the big brand, but, you know, like you said, ESPN is going to take care of the Big Ten, the SEC, and a little bit on the Big 12, and a little bit on the Pac-12. So there is an opportunity there for Fox. Fox is located in LA.
Yeah.
You know, it's a West Coast-based type show.
Right.
I just, you know, and like, we've talked about this before, Brad. The first game of the season, everyone gets a pass. So I'm not – if ASU wins by 40, if they lose by 40, it's really not going to be totally because the game started at 9 in the morning. It's going to be because it's the first game of the year. And, oh, by the way, it's the first game of the year in early November.
Well, like Michigan
– all kinds of factors.
Michigan played Minnesota last week, and it's some of the ugliest football I've ever seen. But it was their first game.
Mm-hmm.
And you have all these kids – again, we're dealing with 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds – that have been sitting there every Saturday in August and September and October, not allowed to play. And so they're finally allowed to play. And they don't know if they're going to make it through an entire season because of the virus. So there's going to be some kids that are going to be told by their circles, man, you got to show out. You need some tape. You're a senior. You better show out. So there's got to be that factor that's going on. As I mentioned to Bruce, with the Big 12 losing again over the weekend, Oklahoma State, there's not going to be a Big 12 team in the postseason.
No.
So is there an opportunity?
In the playoff.
Is there an opportunity for the Pac-12? There's an opportunity. Is anybody going to give an opportunity? So
I don't know. The Pac-12 may look a lot like the Big 12 as the season progresses.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think that, you know, we saw the week one to week two switch. You mentioned Michigan. Michigan beats Minnesota. Michigan State loses to Rutgers.
Yeah, right.
Rutgers under Graciano. They're going to be better just because he's a really good coach. But then Michigan State goes on the road. They're 21-point underdogs, and they beat Michigan in the Big House. So that's the improvement you're going to see as these teams kind of get their feet wet. So who knows?
There's going to be swings. Like, I don't think U of A is going to be as bad as everybody says. I don't think they're going to be good. But I can't look at Utah and say they're going to be amazing. They lost a lot of people, first of all. And the virus numbers up in Utah are soaring. So I have to look at everything and say, who's going to make it onto the field? Our game's going to get canceled on Friday afternoon. Like, Bruce and I were talking off the air about maybe seeing each other before the game. His crew calls 5 a.m. He's got to be at the stadium at 5 a.m. for a 9 a.m. show out there. Or their show starts at 7 a.m. And he's like, I may not come over and say hi. It's fine. I get it. That's the world we're in. But I do think for just to get these games on for Arizona State, they could play at midnight, and I'd still be there. It'd be a good story. So there you go. All right. Good work. Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Nothing or Everything. Our thanks to Bruce Feldman and also Greg Cosell. Chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. As always, he is the Iron Man. The show repeats over and over and over. Have a great Monday.